Great is thy faithfulness. What a great song to sing for this morning. Today we are going to be talking about the faithfulness of God. The faithfulness of God. As we've been going through these attributes of God, we're looking at different glimpses that people have with God to learn about him. And today we're going to be looking at Abraham and his interaction he has with God. What we're going to see out of this is God's faithfulness. And you may think, well, I already know about that, about God's faithfulness. I got this one figured out. I can kind of sit back, check out. I agree, God is faithful. I say, watch out. Be prepared. Prepare yourself to be amazed again at God's faithfulness. You think you know God's faithfulness. You're going to see it a new way this morning about his faithfulness. Faithfulness, generation to generation, not just in our lives, but life after life after life, about our faithful, loving God. So that's our hope today. So if you got your Bibles, open them up to Genesis chapter 15, where we're going to look at Abraham. Actually, at this time, his name is Abram. He's not yet Abraham. He's Abram. And Abram is going to have an encounter with God that is kind of a weird encounter. All right, this is, you know how Old Testament has some of those weird passages that you read, just kind of wrinkle your face a little and move on. This is one of those passages. It's an odd one. When God, Abram has this encounter with God, this weird thing happens, and it's just kind of like, I don't know what that was about. Well, today we're going to see what that weird thing is about and the significance it plays in our life, not just our life, but everyone's life. So Genesis chapter 15 is our passage this morning. I'm going to turn there as well. And I'm going to read the whole chapter, 1 to 21. And again, this is Abram having an encounter with God. All right, this is what it says. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Verse 4, Then the word of the Lord came to him, This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, So shall your offspring be. Verse 6, Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of it? So the Lord said to him, Bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and mistreated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, To your descendants, I give this land from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Cabanites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites. Whew. Okay, that is our passage this morning. And you're thinking, Tom, how are you pulling a sermon out of that passage? What's going on in there? That's kind of a weird passage. Well, first off, a little context about what's going on here. This passage comes in a context where God has made a promise to Abram. Back in Genesis 12, he says, I want you to go and follow me. I'm not going to tell you where, just follow me. And he says, I'm going to make you into a great nation. He says, you will be my people. I will be your God. And so I want you to follow me, and I'm going to make you into this great nation. That was back in Genesis chapter 12. So here in this passage, this is 10 years later, and in order to be a nation, you need two things. If you're going to be a nation, you need two things. You need descendants, you got to have people, and you need land. You give me a nation, you need to have descendants and land, right, to make a nation. So here in this passage, we're 10 years down the line, God shows up and Abram asks him the question, will I have descendants and will I have land? He asked him that. He asked him. He kind of asked him the follow-up. You said you're going to do this thing. Will I have descendants? Will I have land? God answers him, and when he asks, will I have descendants? He answers, Abram, come look in the sky. Look at the stars. You're going to have so many descendants. It's going to be more than the stars in the sky. Yes, you're going to have descendants. And then he says, will I have land? And he then goes on and talks about how his descendants will eventually enter into the land. He won't go there, but his descendants will. There's going to be a time of hardship, 400 years of slavery, and then they're eventually going to be, they will go into this land. So yes, they will have, so God says, yes, you will have descendants and you will have land. And then the key verse in this passage is verse 6, where it says, Abram believed the Lord and he credited to him as righteousness. Abram believed God. When God said he was going to do it, Abram believed him. And why I want to point this out, this is the key passage. In the New Testament, they refer back to this passage. Paul talks about this very verse as such an important verse to talk about the significance of having faith in God. He points to this one verse in Romans, gosh, I think it's chapter 4. He talks about this very verse about how this is such an important thing, how Abram isn't just the physical father of God's people, of the nation of Israel, but he's the spiritual father. He's the father of faith. He's the father of all that believe. We're all heirs because he believed first, that when he believed God and God credited to him as righteousness, he pointed to Abram's faith. And what I want to point out today, it doesn't say Abram believed in the Lord. It said Abram believed the Lord. You catch the difference there? It doesn't say Abram believed in the Lord. It said he believed the Lord. And that's our foundational truth today. That's what I want to start with. Make sure we got to get on the same page on this. That, and this is our foundational truth, that faith is more than just believing in God. It's believing God. Often when we talk about faith, we ask, do you believe in Jesus? And if the answer is yes, then you have faith. But that's not how the Bible talks about it. The Bible talks about a very different picture of faith. It doesn't talk about believing in God. It talks about believing God. About when you hear God, do you believe him? Do you trust in what he says? When you read his word and it says something, do you believe it? It's like, yes, that's really true. When he asks us to do something, do we say yes? Do we obey him? Do we not do the things he doesn't want us to do? Right? Do we follow him fully in our lives? Believing God. The key to faith isn't believing in God. It's believing God. James 2:19, James is talking. He says, you believe in the one God? Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. It's not about believing in God. Even the demons got that one down. They know God is God. True faith isn't just believing in God. It's believing God. And so I want to start off, make sure we get that distinction. That's what we're talking about today, is not just believing in God, but believing him. That is the key to faith. We look at Abram. He didn't just believe in God. He believed God. Abram's story is a crazy story. Genesis 12, you know, God shows up and says, leave everything. Leave your family. Leave your home. Leave everything you hold dear. And follow me. And go to the land I will show you. And Abram says, okay, where? God answers, I'll tell you later. 10 years later, in our passage here, Genesis 15, he says, I'm going to give you descendants. He says, great, when? He said, I'll tell you later. Just keep following. Keep believing. Genesis 17, 25 years after the original promise, God shows up and tells Abram, I'm going to give you a son. And Abram says, how? I'm 100, wife's 90. This is not happening. How is this going to happen? God says, I'll tell you later. Just keep following me. And then fast forward to Genesis 22. They have the son. They conceive. They have the miracle child. And God says, okay, Abram, now I want you to sacrifice the child. And Abram says, why? God says, I'll tell you later. Just keep following me. Abram's life is full of these major faith tests. These major faith challenges, questions of whether or not he's really going to believe God, and every time he passed. Abram passed. He had an amazing attribute, and that was the attribute of being able to say yes to God, that he believed God. And Abram lived an incredible life because of it. Now, don't be fooled into thinking Abram's this special guy and he's like super gifted and he was so great. You should read sometime Genesis 12 to 24. That's Abram. His life was a mess, right? He was a flawed human being. He gave up his wife to the Pharaoh. He says, here, you go sleep with my wife. It's okay. Just don't hurt me. Go have my wife. He slept with his female slave, whatever, the house slave to his wife. He went and slept with her to try to have a child. He had a slave. Okay, can we acknowledge that too? This is a little problem. This was not it's not like he had it all figured out, right? This was a flawed human being. Yet he lived a spectacular, amazing, purposeful, meaningful life because he believed God. And he kept saying yes to God. And you may think, okay, that's cool, but that's not really a fair comparison, Tom, because God showed up and made this big promise to him that he could believe. He made this promise to Abram. And so he had that. That's not really fair because he always had that promise to look to. And he could always hold on to that promise. And, you know, so that's not really a fair comparison, Tom, because I don't have that. Hold on to that thought. Keep your finger in Genesis. We're going to turn to a second passage. I don't normally do this, but this is so important for us to see. Keep your finger in Genesis 15, and then flip over all the way to the other side of the Bible, Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6. This is such an important passage, this Genesis 15. Not only does Paul talk about it in Romans 4, he also addresses it in Galatians. And then here, the author of Hebrews also refers to this very same passage, Hebrews chapter 6. I'm going to start reading at verse 16. And this is talking about the significance of Abram believing God's promise, that God made this promise to Abram. So keep your finger in Genesis 15. Go over to Hebrews chapter 6. And I'm going to read starting at verse, actually 16 is where I'm going to start. I'll start at 16. Okay, this is what it says, Hebrews 6:16. People swear, this is about talking about God's promise that he made to Abram. People swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what he has said and puts an end to argument. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised. Did you catch that? Not just to Abram, but to the heirs, those who followed Abram. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath. He made this promise. God did this so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope set before us may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. And he has become a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Okay, so why is it so important? Why is it so important that God made this promise to Abram? Because it wasn't just a promise to Abram. It was a promise to Abram and his heirs. That all that those who follow him, Abram is the father of faith. He's the father of faith because Abram believed in God. It was credited to him as righteousness. And all those who believe after him are heirs of that same promise. So as God is making a promise to Abram, God's saying to Abram, you will be my people, I will be your God. You follow me, you believe me, and I will take care of you. I will bless you, I'm going to give you descendants and a land, I'm going to make you a great nation, and lead you to the promised land, a place of paradise. So he made that promise to Abram, but we, as fellow followers in faith, we as those who believe in God are also recipients of that promise, as we are heirs of that promise, as Hebrews described it. Heirs of the promise. And why does that matter? Because that promise, it says, is supposed to serve as an anchor for our soul. As an anchor for our soul. And that's the next fill in the blank of why this is so important. Why this matters so much, the importance is this. Believing God, right? That was not about believing in God, it's about believing God. Believing God serves as an anchor for the soul. All through Abram's life, he had that promise to hold on to. I know God's going to come through in this. And that served as an anchor for him, kind of kept him on track. And we too, as heirs of that same promise, that same promise serves as an anchor for us. Being able to believe God and his promises, serves as an anchor for our souls. Any boat people here? I know Noah's a boat person. Anyone else? Anchor's real basic, right? You're out in the water. And the problem with water is it moves. Right? You're in a boat and the water moves around. And you can't just park a boat and just expect it to still stay where it's supposed to be because the water moves the boat. So you could park a boat, turn it off, take a nap and wake up an hour later, you'll be a whole different spot, right? So the point of the anchor is the anchor drops down through all the things that move, all the water and everything, all the fluidity, and it drops down to something solid. And it locks on to something solid. So because of that anchor is locked down to something solid, you stay put. So then all the motion of the water, it doesn't matter because the anchor holds you firm. It keeps you in the same spot. And he's saying the promises of God, trusting in this promise, serves as an anchor for the soul. You get the picture? The anchor for the soul. By putting our belief, not just in God, but believing God, it provides an anchor for the soul. And it kind of leads to a follow-up question, like, what have you planted your anchor in? What's the unchanging thing in your life? The thing that's never going to change that you can count on, and you set your anchor in that because everything else is moving, but that one thing isn't going to move. And the reason I ask is because if you put your anchor in your job, I got news for you, it's going to move. If you put your anchor in your relationships change. It's going to move. If you're putting your anchor in your good looks, that's most of us, right? It's going to change, right? All these things, if you put your anchor in anything, any of these circumstantial things, it's no different than if you dropped an anchor and hooked it into an old boot on the ground. When the currents come, it's going to drag that boot. Or in a piece of driftwood, if you put your anchor in a piece of driftwood, the current's going to come, it's going to drag that driftwood around. Only the promise of God, believing God, is the one solid thing that's never going to change. That God's promises are going to be around long after your job. God's promises are going to be around long after all the circumstances you face in life. God's promises are going to be around long after you. When you're dead and in the grave, God's promises are still going to be solid and firm and secure. So City Lights Church, we need to place our anchor, our hope, the one thing that's not to change in our life that we can count on, in the promises of God. We need to believe God because that serves as an anchor for our soul. So that's why this is so important. Because I think when we don't believe God, that's the root of most of our problems. It's because we don't believe God. Why do you covet? Why do you look at what someone else has? Oh, I want that. Why do you covet? Because you don't believe God. You don't believe that He really. You don't believe in how He provides for you. You don't believe in. You don't believe that He's really your provider. That's why you covet. Why do you have so much anger? Why, when it takes such a little thing to knock you off track and make you angry? Because you don't believe God. You don't believe God in His justice. You don't really believe that He's got this covered and He's going to handle it. You take it upon yourself in your anger to snap and make that thing, punish them for how they wronged you. Why? Because we don't believe God. Why do we keep falling for sin? Why do we keep buying into that temptation? Because we don't believe God's goodness. We think He's holding out on me. I'm missing out on something. That sin is going to be better than what God's got for me. I don't believe in God's goodness. So you see why this is so important, that it's not just about believing in God. Even the demons do that. It's about believing God, because that serves as an anchor for our soul. Okay, but there's two issues with this. Two reasons we don't believe God. Two underlying questions that are in there. You may not realize it until we address them, but there's two reasons why we don't believe God. We have two questions, two underlying issues that we need to address. First one is this. Two difficulties we have in believing God. First, how do I know He'll do His part? We ask the question, when it's time to really trust God, to believe Him, well, how do I know He will do His part? How do I know He's going to come through? How do I know He won't bail on me and I'll step out and I'll believe Him and trust Him and then He won't follow through? How do I know that? How can I really trust that? How can I believe Him? Abraham, go back to Genesis 15. Abram asked that very question. God says, I'm going to provide you a land. Abram says in verse 8, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I'll gain possession of it? How can I know? How can I know you're going to do what you said you're going to do? And notice God doesn't get mad. How dare you, Abram, question me? I'm the God of this universe and I was here. Where were you? He doesn't do that. All right? Instead, He says, go get some animals. What? He says, So Abram says, how can I know? Verse 9, the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. That's where it gets weird, right? But yet, Abram immediately knows what to do. Verse 9, so go get me the animals. Verse 10, Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then birds of the prey came down on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. So he says to God, how can I know? God says, go get some animals. Abraham says, got it. He gets the animals, he arranges them, he kills them, he cuts them in half, lays them out. He knows what to do. Why? Because this is very familiar to his context. Abram knew that right now they're about ready to enter into contract with each other. They're about ready to make a covenant commitment to each other. He knew when God said, when he says, I don't know, how do I know? God says, get some animals. He says, got it. We're going to do the covenant thing. See, with us, how do we make a binding agreement with each other? We fill out a contract, right? Terry and Rhea had a beautiful wedding a few weeks ago, right? And they got up there and they did their vows to each other. And I take you to having a whole sickness and health, richness, poor, all that stuff, better or for worse, all that, till death do us part. They made vows to each other. They had this beautiful ceremony. But they weren't actually married until they signed that contract. Because that's the binding contract, all right? Because we do contracts that way. And if Rhea would ever question, how do I know Terry's going to do that? How do I know he's going to be with me for... How do I know? He signed the contract. That's how you know. Because we sign contracts. If you go buy a car, they'll give you the car, but you sign a contract to say, I'm going to make payments on this car. So they give you the car, and you enter into this binding thing. You sign and say, I will pay for this car. And that contract lays out everything, all the consequences of not following the contract. If you break the agreement, if you break this covenant, the contract lays out what's going to happen. They're going to come take your car. Okay? Same thing if you rent an apartment. There's a contract. They sign the contract, and it lays out the consequences, all the things you're going to do, and it lays out the consequences if you don't do that. And you sign that contract, and that contract is a binding agreement. Well, back then, they weren't in a written society, a written culture. They were an oral culture. So for them, when it was time to enter into a contract, what they would do, they would take some animals, they would kill those animals, spread them out, and both people would walk through between those animals, and that would be a contract where they say, may I be like these animals if I don't hold up my end of this contract? They act out the consequence of not obeying the deal. May I be like these animals? May I be cut off and killed and whatever? And they walk through it. That's pretty shocking, right? I think if we did our stuff like that, people would make their car payments, right? You remember that, right? So this was a very normal thing. So when he says, how do I know? God says, get some animals. And he says, all right. And he gets the animals, he immediately cuts them up, and he gets ready, lays them out. Because he knows. This is what they did. This is how they bound contracts. He'd already make a commitment. Because they act out the consequence of this broken covenant, of the curse. And we see this not just in history, we also see in other places in the Bible. Jeremiah 34:18 says, those who have violated my covenant and have not fulfilled the terms of the covenant they made before me, I will treat like the calf they cut in two and then walk between his pieces. This was kind of a normal thing back then. It's a binding contract. And so Abram knew about the covenant ramification ceremony. So when God says bring the animals, he knew what was going on. But now this covenant contract ramification went very different than how Abram would have expected. So at verses 12 to 16, he cuts out the animals, and then a darkness comes over the land. He enters into this dark time. He talks about this darkness, right? And talking about the difficult time that people are going to go through, and it's just this dark. And then in verse 17, when the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. Now, what we know about the two words in there, smoking, the smoke, and the word blaze, those are the same words used generations later in Exodus. When God appears to Moses on Mount Sinai, that's the same words. Those same words are used. The word smoke and that word blaze are the same words talked about the presence of God. Not only that, but those are the exact same words that how God led his people, again, this is generations later, how God led his people through the wilderness through a pillar of smoke by day. It's the same word. And a pillar of blaze of fire by night. It's the same word. So here we see this pot, smoke and blaze, and it goes through, walks through the pieces of the carcasses, and it enters into this covenant. So here we see God walked through those two pieces, through the pieces. God entered into the covenant. So how can I know that God does his part? Well, he promised. He promised he would do his part. He entered into that covenant. He said, may I be like these animals if I don't do my part in this covenant. Abraham says, well, how do I know? You know, I'll be your people. I'll be your people. You'll be my God. How do I know you'll hold you up? He says, I will be like these animals if I don't do my part. My immortality will suffer mortality. My limitless power will be limited. I will become powerless. My infinity and infinite nature will be defined and confined and ultimately destroyed. I will experience death if I don't hold up my end of this bargain. May I be like these animals, cursed and cut off. He made that commitment right then and there. He promised. So that's your thing. That's your answer. How do I know he'll do his part? Well, he promised. Not just to Abram, but to us too. Because again, back to that Hebrews passage, he did this. He made that oath so we could be firm and secure in our belief of him. So we can have full confidence in him. He said he made an oath by something that's impossible. There's no one greater than himself, so he made the oath by himself. He bet on himself. He says, I'm going to do it because I say so. I'm going to walk through that. I'm going to make this commitment to you guys. It's something you can hold firm and secure. So he made this promise. He entered in this covenant with us. That's the first one. How can I know God's going to do his part? How can I know I can really trust him? Well, he promised. He's going to do it. What do you think, God's going to lie? We've got to believe God. Okay, that leads to the second issue, the second difficulty we have. And I think this is the bigger one. Most of us believe God's going to do his part. If you're in this room, you probably believe that. The bigger struggle is this one. Not how can I know he's going to do his part. How can I know I'll do my part? I know me. I know what I do. We'll be your people. You'll be my God. And I'll be your God. What if I screw up at being your people? What if I don't hold up my end? And we made this agreement, right? So I'll follow you and then you'll bless and lead to the promised land. What if I don't hold up my end of the bargain? I think a lot of us don't believe God because we know that we'll probably screw it up. When God asks to do something, I say, I can't even, because if I started this path, I'll get off path and I'll be out on a limb by then. And I can't really trust God because I'm going to screw it up. Why don't I believe God? Well, because how do I know I'll do my part? I'm going to be the one that's going to mess this thing up. I'm going to fail. I'm going to fall short at being your people. I'm not going to do the things you want me to do. I know how I am. I can't believe you because your promises are contingent on me doing my part. I don't think I'm going to do my part. Okay. So Abram's thinking this, right? Here's the amazing part of this. This is the part that didn't go how Abram expected. They cut the animals up. The flaming pot went through. And that was it. God went through those pieces alone. He didn't say, come on, Abram, we're going to go through this. We're going to enter this covenant. He went through that alone. Sometimes only one sometimes only one party would have to go through, but typically if there was like a king and like a servant, the servant was entering in contact with the king, the servant would go through, but the king wouldn't have to go through because he's the king. So sometimes that would happen, but never the king would just go through. Why would the king make a commitment to the servant? And here, so God went through alone. Abram didn't go through. This is the gospel. This is it. God went through alone. He entered into a covenant with us, and he went through alone. The gospel isn't a partnership. It's not I do my part, he does his part. It's not like I get most of the way, then he finishes it off. I get up to the edge of the cliff, and then the bridge is across, and I can walk over. It's all God. God did it. He walked through those pieces alone. And when he walked through those pieces alone, what he was saying, I take upon myself the punishment if I don't do my part. I also take upon myself the punishment if you don't do your part. If you don't do your part, may I be like these animals. May I be cut off. May my immortality experience mortality. May my infinity experience limitation. May my powerfulness, all powerfulness, become powerlessness. May I be killed and murdered like these animals and cut off and despised if you don't do your part. How can I know that I'll do my part? You don't. How do we know? Why can I still believe God? Because He does my part. Don't let your unwillingness to do your part stop you from believing God, because He does your part. This isn't a partnership here. And when He walked through those pieces, in His perfect foresight, He knew, when they cut those animals up and He was making that commitment, in His perfect foresight, He knew that not only Abram, but all mankind to follow was going to fail. He knew, it wasn't like, oh, I hope I don't have to cash this check. He knew in His perfect foresight that man was going to fail and fall and not and hold up in their end of the bargain, and He was going to suffer the consequences of an unmet covenant. And that's what happened. Mark 15, 33 and 34 talks about that, about what happens. It says, talking about the cross and Jesus paying the penalty. At noon, a darkness came over the whole land. Remember when He was talking about this, when they're entering this covenant? This darkness came over. This wasn't like, hooray, we're going to do this thing. We're going to be buddies. This was a solemn, this was a big deal. A darkness came over the land. So at noon, a darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, my God, why have you forsaken me? And there the triune God, unified as one, was cut off, was killed, experienced mortality, experienced powerlessness, experienced all that, paid the penalty of the broken covenant because we didn't do our part. He knew when He walked through those pieces that that was going to result, that He would be destroyed, experience death, and be cut off. So our central truth today, we're ending with our central truth today, because we're building up to it. This is the main thing I want you guys to get. The reason I can believe God, Jesus Christ. That's why you can believe God, because of Jesus. He is the promise fulfilled. Jesus is the promise fulfilled, the reason you can believe God. And you might be thinking, Tom, okay, this is a Genesis passage. You don't get to talk about Jesus. Jesus comes in Matthew. I know the Bible well enough that Jesus appears in Matthew and we're in Genesis. So that's kind of a stretch, don't you think? No, because Jesus does not begin in Matthew, okay? Jesus doesn't even begin in Genesis 1:1. Jesus begins before all that. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And later on it says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Who's the Word of God? Jesus. Jesus is the Word of God in the beginning. Now look back at Genesis 15 with me. Are we still there? I know we did the last fill in the blank. You think you're done? Genesis 15, verse 1. After this, who's the Word of God? Jesus, okay? After this, the Word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. What, like a Bible? Floating Bible? No. The Word of the Lord. Who's the Word? Jesus is in Genesis 15. Jesus shows up and says, Abram, do not be afraid. Why? Because that's the natural reaction. You stand before God, fear. And not just like, I'm a little nervous, but like face on the floor, fear. Why is the natural reaction to that as fear? We fear whenever there's danger imminent, right? You see a snake out of the corner of your eye, your first reaction is to twitch, right? Because it's like built into it, it's just danger. You stand before the judgment of God, stand before the wrath of God as a sinful being, your reaction is fear. Jesus stands before him and says, Abram, don't fear, I am your shield. Don't fear, I am your shield. I am your protection against the judgment of God, the wrath of God. Not saying the wrath isn't real. I'm your protection, I'm your shield. Don't fear, I am your shield. And then he says, I am your true reward. I'm your great reward. Not I'm here to bring you your reward. Not I'm the bringer of a reward. Not I'm here to bring the descendants as your reward. The land as your reward. He says, I am the reward. Jesus in Genesis 15, I'm your reward. And so when Abram says, how can I know? How can I know you're going to do what you say you're going to do? Jesus says, get the animals. And he knew what was coming. He says, get the animals, cut them up. I'm going to walk through them. You don't walk through them. I'm going to walk through them. I'm going to walk through for both of us. See, it's always been Jesus. That's always been the plan. It's always been Jesus. Jesus isn't plan B. It isn't because we screwed up and God's like, doggone it. Now what do I do? They broke the covenant. We got to have someone pay. It'll be Jesus, I guess. It's always been Jesus. This has always been the plan. This isn't a fix it for an Old Testament mistake. God thought, well, I thought that law thing was going to work. But they couldn't obey it, so now I got to do a different way. Let's try grace. It's always been grace. It's always been Jesus. Abraham, chapter 15, verse 6. Abraham believed God. It was credited to him as righteousness. Wait, righteousness comes because of the cross and what Jesus did for us. Yeah. And it was good in Genesis 15. It's always been Jesus. That's always been the plan. Anchor yourself to Jesus. We need to believe him. Why can you believe him? He said he's going to do his part. He promised. And don't let you not doing your part stop you. You're not going to do your part. He's going to do it for you. But he still wants you to believe him. To follow him. To trust him. When he says something, to do it. And you think, why am I screwing it up? Yeah, you might. But you know what's worse than screwing it up? Not trying in the first place. Not believing him. Just doing your own thing. Abram screwed up plenty. Pimping his wife out and sleeping with his house servant and owning a slave, right? We already talked about this. He's a mess. And yet, he believed God. It was credited to him as righteousness. Because God did his part. He does ours as well. So we're going to end today with communion. Acknowledging how Jesus fulfilled that covenant. And as you come forward to take, we got crackers up here representing his body broken for you. We have cups of juice up here representing his blood shed for you. And I want you to consider, as you're taking this, how he walked through that alone. He entered that covenant alone, knowing full well what was to come. And he did this generations ago. And he's been faithful generation after generation. And his faithfulness doesn't end with us. It's going to continue long before. When you're dead and in the grave, his faithfulness is still going to be good. And so today, my hope is that you will believe God as you take communion. You'll be reminded of his sacrifice for you, and you will believe him. And if you've realized, I never really believed God. I just believed in God. I thought that was kind of what it was about. I believe in God, and then I go about my business. Well, today I want you to believe God. Trust him. Tell him that. And trust him. Follow him. Let's pray. God, I am so thankful for you. You walked through alone. And because I screwed it up, you paid the price. Thank you for loving us enough. Thank you for not giving up on us. Thank you for who you are. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you that we can count on you. Help me to believe you no matter what. Believe you when I worry about circumstances and how you may not come through. Believe you especially when I worry about myself. Help me to follow you anyways. Thank you for loving me. Thank you for dying for me. It should have been me, but it was you.